This is Help Wanted, the show that makes your work work for you. I'm Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
And I'm money expert Nicole Lappin. On Tuesdays, Jason and I answer the helpline and help callers solve their work problems.
And on Thursdays, I give you one way to improve your work and build a career or company you love.
And it starts now. Jason, on the show, we talk a lot about finding a business partner that you're compatible with. But today we're going to talk about what happens when you find a romantic partner that you're compatible with through business.
Yeah, this is a really hot topic. You and I get a lot of questions about it, and for good reason, because 27% of U.S. workers have had a workplace romance, and 40% have flirted with a coworker. So they've thought about a workplace romance, maybe. That is from a recent survey by the Society for Human Resource Management. And it's not all just harmless fun. In that survey, nearly 20% of people who said they'd been in a workplace romance also said that it hurt their career. So if you're going to do this, you need to take it seriously. You need to romance like it's your job, which is why today, Nicole, I am bringing on two friends of mine who did it right. They are Clint and Kira Carter. They're married. They have two kids. And they met when they were coworkers at Men's Health Magazine, which is where I met them, too. I was a colleague of theirs. But for a while, they kept it a secret. And I and our friends there had no idea they were dating.
Did you find out the secret?
Oh, did I? It actually wasn't that scandalous, but I'm sure we'll talk about it.
All right. We're talking to Clint and Kira about how they navigated the early days before everybody, including you, knew about their relationship, how they kept it under wraps, what questions you should ask before you move forward, and advice for anyone who might have an office crush.
Clint and Kira, I have seen you many times in many different circumstances, but never like this. Welcome to Help Wanted.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Hey, thanks for having us on, Jason.
Well, we're excited to have you. I was just thinking back to how I first met you both, and it was not as a couple. It was as individual colleagues at Men's Health. Clint probably first, and then Kira, I think. And I did not know for some time. I don't even know what the overlap was when you guys started being involved.
Yeah, I think it took us some time to figure it out too.
Yeah, I mean, I think you probably knew us as individuals for like a year before we were involved.
I think, Jason, you were editing me for a while Kira was still working out of a different office. And then at some point, Kira moved. She was in a Pennsylvania office, and then she moved to our office in New York. I think that's probably when you met Kira, and then we started to get to know each other better. By we, I mean me and Kira, not me and you, but also me and you.
Yeah, all of us. So let's reveal, I guess, the thing that I didn't see, right, Nicole? That's kind of what we've brought Clint and Kira on to talk about here is what I never saw, which was how you guys maybe started to navigate those very early stages or had conversations about what and when you would reveal this. I'm so curious what that was like. We've actually never talked about it.
Was it just understood that it was going to be hush-hush on the DL, at least in the beginning?
Yeah, I would say in the beginning, when we were figuring out, is this serious? Is this going anywhere? You know, that awkward, just kind of pre-dating time period, right? Which is always like, where is this going? But at work, you're like, really want to know that answer before you tell anybody.
I mean, I think that awkward, what is this?
DTR.
DTR? Is that a thing?
Yeah. Define the relationship.
Oh, define the relationship.
I didn't know that.
The women did, so that says something. So yeah, DTR sucks, but DTR plus work is double DTR.
WDTR, DTRW? Sounds like a radio station.
Yeah, right.
Brought to you by DTRW. I've thought about this a little bit, and I actually think the fact that we worked together made it a little bit easier for us to sort of, it like imposed a certain governor on how fast we could escalate things. It allowed us to, I think, kind of casually spend time together as coworkers, get to know each other. And then I think by the time we went on our first date, neither one of us was 100% sure that the other person was defining it as a date. We had talked about, oh, we love Indian food, and oh, you have a favorite Indian food place. And so I was like, well, you got to show me your Indian food place. And so I went with Kira to her BYOB Indian place. And then that was probably the first time that we were really just the two of us outside of work alone together. And we're both trying to figure out, is this a date or is it not? And turns out it was.
Two babies later.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and meanwhile, up until that point, I mean, Jason, you know the culture of men's health and stuff, but I'll explain. Like, we were all kind of hanging out a lot anyway. There were a lot of events. The whiskey brand would come into the office and everybody's hanging out. And so we would kind of invite each other to these quote unquote like work things, but it was very gray. You know, I was like, oh, I definitely want him to come to these work things. It seems like he wants me to come to these things too, but it's still sort of work. But then that time that we went to the Indian restaurant was the first time where we were like, okay, this is a restaurant that is not a work-related thing. And it seems like now this is date-like. And then he paid and I was like, okay, so I think this is probably a date.
Oh, yeah.
There's no like men's health tiki masala assignment.
Yeah,
right. I assume. Jason, did you know that there was a little like chemistry going on between them?
No, I did not at all. I mean, well, we were just chatting before we started recording and you guys, Clint and Kira, remember some moment in which I picked something up, but I don't remember what that is at all. So I have all sorts of questions about the conversations that you guys had about the intersection of the relationship and work, and maybe if there were any rules that you created. But I guess just before we get there, I am curious, how did I notice? Because you remember this and I don't.
So I remember it was a conversation that you and me were having. So it was Sandy, and we had a concert at Brooklyn Bowl.
Sandy the hurricane?
The hurricane.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was Big Frida, right?
You remember Big Frida?
Oh, yeah.
You got on stage that night, Jason. I recall.
Whoa.
I sure did. I shook my booty, which is...
Is there evidence of this?
I hope so, but I don't know so. But if people don't know, Big Frida is a New Orleans bounce, is I think the genre. And every song is basically about shaking your ass. Like every single song is the whole genre is shaking your ass.
Yeah.
So I definitely, yes, I did. I got up on stage with Big Frida and I shook
you
my
shook
ass.
Your ass.
So that I remember.
Your flat Jewish ass.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a lot
the
to
people
shake.
What they want.
Right. Yeah. It sort of mildly waved it.
So Clint lived near the venue, right? And I did not. I lived on the Upper East Side at the time. And since it was Sandy the Hurricane, you could not travel any, like you couldn't get a cab. You couldn't take the subway. You would just had to walk everywhere. It was wild, right? So from the office, we walked to Brooklyn. So you were like, how did you get here? And I was like, oh, well, we walked over the 59th Street Bridge, and then we walked through Queens, and then we walked over the Pulaski Bridge, and then we walked through Brooklyn. Like, I'm going through this like epic journey.
It was probably 6 miles.
Yeah, it's not next door. It makes sense for Clint because he's going home. But for me to walk all the way over there, I'm not walking all the way back, right? And so I explained this epic journey, and you asked the natural follow-up question, which is like, how are you getting home? And I was like, oh, no. Now I have to admit that I'm going back to Clint's. Like, I'm not walking back home. So I don't know if you remember that at all. I don't know if in your mind you were like, oh, they are definitely sleeping together. But I was like, yeah, that's the only way this makes logical sense.
Jason, if I recall, you were gracious enough to just kind of let it go as an awkward moment. But you knew. You definitely 100% knew. We were completely busted.
You let it go.
Did you know?
Well, I don't remember this moment, but what you have described sounds like I would like this to go, right? Which is to say that something wouldn't have tracked, which is a term that I was introduced to in magazines. You know, if you're reading something and it doesn't really make sense, you say it doesn't track. So something about this didn't track, and I wasn't smart enough immediately to just keep that to myself. I had to ask the follow-up question. And then once I revealed it clearly to myself, then I did shut up and just like not create an awkward moment. So that sounds about right, right? Which is to say, not enough foresight to avoid the awkward moment, but enough graciousness, hopefully, to then skirt away from the awkward moment. So good for me, maybe, and good for you guys even better.
So that's when you found out. And I feel like there absolutely wasn't a moment when we were like, attention, everybody, we would like you to know that we are now a couple.
I mean, what were you worried about? Like, is there a men's health manual or employee handbook? Like, do not kiss each other or tell them about
it. There is not, but just, you don't want people talking about you. It's embarrassing. You know what? People looking at your dirty underwear and just hanging out. Like, I don't know. I can't imagine that there would have been any repercussions. We still don't know if we're going to like break up in a month. And you don't want that to be the next round of gossip.
Right. That's what I would be concerned about, is introducing a thing that could also change. It's like, if you don't know what it is, then you don't want to put people on the ride. I don't know. Kira, yeah. Were you worried about anything?
I was. I mean, I think we basically started liking each other. That's point one, right? And then I was still working in the Pennsylvania office. I moved to the New York office a few months later, and then we didn't have that first date for like another year. It was very slow. And then so by the time we had that first date, it felt like we already built up, I don't know, I guess some security that it's like actually a real thing and not just a work hookup, you know? But I was concerned. I mean, I remember I did check the employee HR book to like make sure like we weren't going to get in trouble. I did. I remember looking. I don't remember the exact thing. I think it was like you're supposed to tell your supervisor something at a certain point, but we weren't official. So I was like, I don't think I have to tell my supervisor just yet.
Did you ultimately?
No. I mean, ultimately, I ended up getting another job very soon after we became official. It kind of solved itself a little bit too.
So if somebody else is navigating a workplace romance or is in the beginning stages of it, what would you suggest to avoid? Like, were there missteps that you guys feel like you took? Cautionary tales?
Well, don't break up, because I think that would be bad. When you go for it, you just got to stick with it, because...
Right, you're committing to at least two babies.
Yeah, right. This is maybe not like the most insightful thing, but just like the fact that I think Kira and I see eye to eye on so many things, how we would approach conflict, how we would approach our friendships and our professional relationships. I think that we are really sort of copacetic on those things. And I think it made it, frankly, easy for us. And I think that's just because we are a good match. I think it would be a lot harder if either one of us were the kind of people that, like, say we did have an argument or something, we were the kind of people that would have, I don't know, like blow up at work or anything like that. But neither one of us has that temperament at all. I think all of that makes it just a little bit easier to manage. If you are somebody who has a hard time sort of separating your work and your home life and your friendships and all of that, if you're the kind of person that could have a fight and then go to work and not be able to stop thinking about it, that's going to be probably a lot more difficult.
Aside from worrying about the water cooler gossip, which, by the way, like, are there still water coolers? Just like Rolodex.
Just giant, like, water bottles now.
Were you worried that it would hurt your careers? I mean, you guys worked really hard to get to that level.
No, we were at the same magazine, but we were on separate teams. If there was a project where we did have to work together, or it turned out that he was editing me or I was editing him, I think at that point I would have brought it to a supervisor or something and been like, hey, it's early, but we're dating, or, you know, it just didn't really feel like an issue, I guess, in that context.
Yeah, I think for me, I probably would have waited until I felt like there was a real conflict of some sort before I would have even thought to brought it up. And I should also say, though, we had the advantage of where we were working was the workplace relationship thing is the kind of thing that we might write about in the magazine. And that already made it something that was that's just the kind of culture it was, where there was an editor that would be like, I don't have problems, I just have story ideas. And it's kind of like, that's the culture. It's not something that we would get fired for. I don't think it would be something that would hurt our careers. It's probably different at different offices. Different organizations have completely different cultures. But the way that ours was, I would have waited until there was a conflict, which hopefully never arises. But if that's the point that I would have probably brought it up, when I was like, you just assigned me to edit this package that Kira is writing, and I think that maybe is not such a great idea. Or at the very least, I should let you know this before I do it.
You know, listening to your answers, both of you, and then pairing it with something that Clint had said a minute ago about how the two of you have similar temperaments and there was a level of understanding and trust going into it, that you knew that the other person, and you knew that you could probably handle something that got rocky if it were to ever get rocky. I have been thinking about that, and I'm going to put it out as a possible piece of advice, and we can all react to it. And the advice is that in non-work romantic settings, you just meet somebody out in the world, you are mostly focused on how this thing is going to develop. You're focused on the front end of it. Because you don't need to think about the back end of it. If it falls apart, then the person just disappears back into the world from which they came. And, you know, it's fine, right? It's like you pull a fish out of the water and you throw it back. You're never going to see the fish again. But when you are starting to date a colleague, is it worth thinking about what is this person like or what am I like? If this ends, it's like you just have to go through that extra step of thinking about what does the potential back end of this situation look like? And are we both able to manage that? Because if not, then I suppose you could get into the kinds of things that Nicole is thinking about in her questions of does it harm your career? Is there some kind of risk? I suppose the way in which it could go bad, assuming there's not some policy against it, is just that it becomes so explosive that one of you just kind of has to leave. Not that the company would ever force you to leave, but one of you got to go because it's just too toxic of a experience now. And so maybe that's a useful thing for people to think about if they're considering an office romance, which is just, is this person and am I good if this ends? Are we good at that? Because if we're good at that, then at least there's more flexibility to explore this. What do you think? Stick around. Help Wanted. We'll be right back. Nicole, have you ever thought about the one that got away?
Jason, I am happily in a relationship. You know that.
No, the hire that got away. Someone that you thought was perfect for your team, but they were already with another employer.
Oh, well, in that case, yeah, I think about her all the time.
Well, it's not too late. You can reach out to that person on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even people who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
Okay, looks like it's time for me to shoot my shot.
Do it. And I know you may have your heart set on one person, but if you do want to open it up and post a role to a bigger applicant pool, you can do it for free at linkedin.com/helpwanted. And because there are so many professionals on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within just 24 hours. So you'll never have a one that got away again.
Incredible. That's linkedin.com/helpwanted.
Yep. LinkedIn.com/helpwanted. Terms and conditions apply. Happy hiring ever after. Nicole, have you ever thought about the one that got away?
Jason, I am happily in a relationship. You know that.
No, the hire that got away. Someone that you thought was perfect for your team, but they were already with another employer.
Oh, well, in that case, yeah, I think about her all the time.
Well, it's not too late. You can reach out to that person on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even people who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
Okay, looks like it's time for me to shoot my shot.
Do it. And I know you may have your heart set on one person, but if you do want to open it up and post a role to a bigger applicant pool, you can do it for free at linkedin.com/helpwanted. And because there are so many professionals on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within just 24 hours. So you'll never have a one that got away again.
Incredible. That's linkedin.com/helpwanted.
Yep. LinkedIn.com/helpwanted. Terms and conditions apply. Happy hiring ever after. Welcome back to Help Wanted. Let's get to it. And so maybe that's a useful thing for people to think about if they're considering an office romance, which is just, is this person and am I good if this ends? Are we good at that? Because if we're good at that, then at least there's more flexibility to explore this. What do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's like, could you deal with the awkwardness? Of course, you know, I don't know, people could surprise you after a breakup and be really awful. And it's worth thinking that through too. But yeah, I think that's great advice. And I think, I mean, even career-wise, I was interviewing for other jobs around that time too, you know, so there was kind of like security in that. I'm not going to be here forever if it all falls apart anyway.
I wish I could say that I had that foresight to think through, will I be okay if this blows up? I did not. But I will say that at that time in my life, I was certainly like dating more casually. And if I would date somebody, it would be, I think I would probably go into relationships with that kind of idea of like you're saying, if this blows up, not a big deal because I'm young and I'm, you know, I've been in New York for a couple of years and I'm having fun. I will say that when Kira and I started dating, I think one of the things that was different, I hadn't thought through, will I be okay if this blows up? But I certainly ran a more sort of rigorous test on my own feelings about the relationship before going in. I wouldn't have, and it's probably one of the reasons why we moved slower. I had to sort of feel like I was really interested and I really wanted to pursue this before I would. So I don't think that I had the foresight to think, will I be okay? If it had blown up, it probably would have been bad. I'm sure it would have been just very uncomfortable and awkward and embarrassing. And I think that probably is something I should have thought through, but I didn't. I also think too, like we're talking to you right now because it worked out. Like we have two kids and, you know, we've been married for years. And yeah, somebody who had to navigate going through a breakup at work, I think that that would be so much more complicated than navigating how do we get into this relationship. That I think is actually fairly easy in some ways, is as long as it works. If it doesn't, that's when it's a problem.
Well, how do you navigate then being in a successful one? Like, did you guys put boundaries around your work and personal life? Like, was there a discussion about no hanky-panky at work? Did that happen?
Ooh, if there was hanky-panky at work, now is the time to reveal it.
No, unfortunately, there wasn't.
Like, you can talk about it. You can talk about all of these things and you can set boundaries. And I think that's probably very smart. But like, it's kind of exciting when you're in a relationship to sort of feel things out slowly and just see how things evolve. If something crosses a line, of course, you talk about it then. But I think, you know, we went to some work events various other times when our colleagues sort of realized that there was something going on. Like, we went to a 5K type thing that we went to with some other people that we work with. And afterwards, Kira was coming back to my place, if I recall. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm trying to remember how we got found out. We were definitely just like walking together and talking quietly a lot and various other things you do when you're in a relationship on the sly. And then at some point, we were all in the subway together. And I think we passed the stop you would have got off on. I can't remember the details of this, but somehow one of our friends found out about it. And then they got on the phone and they were like gossiping about us. And we found out about this later, but we exposed ourselves as being in a relationship. It's not that we necessarily minded and we didn't do it deliberately and we didn't have boundaries on, we have to make sure we didn't get caught. It was just feeling it out in the moment. Like, are you okay that we've been spending a lot of time together, just the two of us separated from the rest of our colleagues? And I guess we are because we're both continuing to do it. Are you okay that we're just going to go past your stop and people are going to be like, I wonder where they're going because she doesn't seem to be going home right now. And I guess we are. Like, I don't know. It's just kind of this, I think there's some excitement there. And I think that it involves a certain amount of trust too, that we had developed with each other because we didn't set clear boundaries. And I think that's probably a good thing to do, but at the same time, not having the boundaries and just sort of establishing them in real time was like kind of exciting.
Or did you talk about work at home? Like, did you gossip about Jason?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Number one subject in their conversation.
Did we or do we? Because we do.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. So, I mean, Nicole, right. Nicole's basically pinpointing like when you have a relationship that starts at work, is there anything that needs to be thought through about creating boundaries between work and personal life? This comes up in co-founders all the time.
Yeah.
But those people are carrying a different kind of responsibility to each other professionally that two colleagues may not.
Yeah. I mean, you should probably like talking about work because we still do. but I remember early on being like, oh, it's really nice that somebody else understands the lifestyle. And at the time we were doing a lot more travel and working late. And I felt like we both got it. I mean, we did, like we were doing the same thing. But yeah, I mean, if you want to leave work at work, it's, you know, it's probably something to think about, or you would have to have some clear boundaries because it's really easy to just talk about work all the time.
Nicole, I was just recently talking with a friend of the show, Julie Griggs, CEO and co-founder of 4Play Social, and her co-founder, whose name is Danielle, and they are best friends who are now co-founders. And they at the very beginning created this great system that I love. I'd never heard anybody else articulate this, which is they created separate channels to talk to each other about personal and work things, which is to say that work only takes place on WhatsApp. So if you're going to send a work message, it's on WhatsApp. If you're going to make a work phone call, it's on WhatsApp. And then text message and regular phone calls are for personal. I asked them, like, what's the point of that? Because you're still just getting the messages. And the answer is because you can then respond based on the part of the relationship that's being called upon. So for example, if you're getting a call from your best friend, you want to answer it and chit chat. But if you're getting a call from your co-founder, maybe you're not in the right headspace for that right now. Maybe you're at home and you're dealing with something else and you will get back to your co-founder later. So it was able to set expectations about what kind of conversation is coming in and therefore how can they respond to it, which is really smart.
Like maybe they go to the kitchen to talk about work and the veranda. I don't know what you guys have in the suburbs like to talk about personal.
Well, we were living in a tiny 400 square foot one bedroom apartment. So,
oh yeah.
We didn't quite have a veranda at the time. You know, though, to that question about setting boundaries, and I think that it's probably very important for some people, but I also think you can focus too much on the risk, because I think there's a huge benefit to being in a relationship with someone that you work with and that you guys have already, you've already decided that you have these shared interests. You already have all these things in common. It's not all downside to like having something, you know, dangerous to navigate with your career. I think it's also this huge benefit. I think that Kira and I both probably benefited by being in a relationship with somebody who is in the same industry as us. We've gone on to not work at the same place, of course, but we understand the other half of each other's lives so well. And there's a lot of support there and we help each other out. We're able to look over each other's work sometimes when we need to. That's something that we've had for years and years and years because we successfully navigated that one moment in time that was a little bit tricky.
That's a wonderful point because you both do the kind of work that can be all-consuming at times. And also that is core to identity, certainly when we were younger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not everybody has that. Not everybody's work is core to their identity. But, you know, a bunch of people working late hours at magazines and not getting paid very well, that's because that work is core to your identity.
Yeah, I think anyone listening to a podcast about career probably core-ish or adjacent to their identity.
Totally. And I had an experience that was similar to what you just articulated, Clint, in that my long-term girlfriend, before I moved to New York for magazines, for Men's Health, in fact, back when I lived in Massachusetts, she worked at Macy's and she was really interested in fashion. And as we got older, that relationship lasted a number of years, had less and less shared interests professionally. And it led to this interesting social schism where it was either her hanging out with me and all my media friends, or it was me hanging out with her and all her like fashion-y friends. And, you know, she was bored when she was with my friends and I was kind of bored when I was with her friends. And when I came to New York, I wanted a totally different experience. And so I went on to, because there was nobody at Men's Health that I was interested in dating, I went on to OkCupid and I typed in Jewish journalist.
Yeah, Jen.
I don't even know why I wrote Jewish because that doesn't matter to me that much. But I did write journalist. And then Jen, who is now my wife, came up. And I found that having her, who had very similar professional interests to me and also completely understood how it could be all-consuming at times, was incredibly helpful. It helped us understand each other and understand those moments when we had to sacrifice something socially, for example, to put it towards work.
And now two kids and a book baby.
That's what I was going to say, because I do think there's a difference between like, okay, so you work in the same industry, you understand where each is coming from, and then working on the same project. Because now the project is bleeding into everything and it's different than just having somebody to like vent to or get advice from. So I don't know, Jason, can I serve it back to you? Like, was it like working on that book together? Because that's work at home.
That was work at home. Yeah. I mean, for context, Jen, my wife and I wrote a romantic comedy called Mr. Nice Guy that was published by a major press in 2018. So it was a while ago now, but the project was like 3 years it took to put that together. And the greatest source of tension in that project was when the project was prioritized differently. So Jen was making that project a regular part of her day. She was setting aside time to work on it. And I wasn't, because I had other things that felt more pressing and more exciting to me. I was doing a lot of freelance magazine writing at the time. And so I wasn't doing the amount of work that she was. And that was very annoying to her. And I at some point realized I needed to step it up, because I had committed to this project with her and I wasn't taking it as seriously as her. And so that required me setting some other things aside, waking up really early, doing it late at night, just doing it. And the other solution that we came to that was really important was what I came to think of as distinct roles and responsibilities, that we needed to know functionally who was the leader, who was the CEO for different kinds of decisions. And the way that we came up with it was that it was a novel set in the magazine world. Jen has a background as a novelist. That was not her first novel. So anything that was related to character development or scenes or anything like that, we could discuss it, but I ultimately gave her final say. And then anything about the setting, the world of magazines, the characters in the book are columnists, and so they write these columns. So anything about the columns, anything that was that felt like it was drawn from my expertise, that I had the final say on. And just knowing that and knowing who gets final say and that that's okay was incredibly helpful, and I think allowed us to survive that project.
It's really interesting you say that, because it makes me think of how much just a relationship in general is running a business at times. I think that there is a part of our, Fakir and I, there's a part of our relationship that's still the romantic relationship, and there's a part of it that's where you have to co-parent, and there's a part of it that's just like, you know, we got to pay a mortgage, we got to make sure that everything is taken care of in life. I will be designated CEO on some things, and she's designated CEO on things. It's just very easy to know, like, who's paying the mortgage and who's paying for daycare? And who's in charge of the yard when it overgrows? We know. We have those roles figured out, and we actually use that exact same language just for everyday household tasks. It's just a quick way to be like, you're in charge. You're CEO of, you know, daycare.
Yeah, it's kind of a running joke. You're CEO of dishes today.
Yeah, totally.
I do in my relationship chief technology officer or like, yeah, chief domestic officer, whatever. But I think that's really smart. It's a good parallel. It's also really interesting that we talk so much about, we have this negativity bias that a spontaneous combustion of chaos is going to happen, or like doom and gloom, or some catastrophe is going to happen. But at the same time, that same force could be for good. There could be a spontaneous combustion of joy. And it could just work out.
And so it has.
You're hoping for that when you go into a relationship where you're surrounded by all your colleagues and friends and you just want it to work out. I mean, a breakup is probably bad anywhere. It's probably worse at work. But I don't know. I think every relationship has probably some tricky things to navigate. Jason, when you were talking about like being in a relationship with someone in a different industry and having just completely different friends groups, that's a thing to navigate too. Like work is just one kind of a thing to navigate. I think in some ways, at least in our situation, I think it was a fairly easy thing to navigate. If nothing else, it eliminates some of the awkward early in a relationship stuff when you're like, well, how often are we going to see each other? How much contact is too much? Are you interested? Because we see each other every day already, no matter what. So it's not like, should I text back? It's kind of taken off the table. We see each other all the time. We can have a lot of small casual touch points along the way that don't feel overly weighted. And I don't know. I thought it was easier. It could have gone bad if we broke up, I'm sure. But as it turned out, we didn't. And I thought that it was like a very good way to get in a relationship.
So the takeaway is go make out with your colleagues.
I suggest it.
So our baby is crying. I'm going to get her to transition.
If you don't mind, just be adding one final thought, which is hearing this conversation and where we got to it makes me want to revise that tip that I'd thrown out earlier, because I was, you know, the whole thing was, just see if the two of you could survive the breakup and that's how you evaluate it. But like, no, actually, that sucks. Who wants to go into something thinking about how it ends? That's not why you go into a relationship. That's not even practical. So instead, the real question, I think, is what is good about this? And if you have good answers to that, then that's a reason to keep going. So make out with your coworkers, and then possibly you will many years later be interrupted on a podcast by a crying baby, and you've got to go take care of the baby. And
I think that's
great for everyone.
Okay, so one more thing I'll add to that too is that Kiers and I were just talking about this the other day. Like, both of us are very like career driven, and it's a very important part of our lives. And I think at a certain point in my life, I would have been like, that's the most important thing. I think in the long run, though, that's the wrong approach. Like, my marriage is much more important to me for my happiness than my career is. And I think that that's the way we should probably be thinking about relationships. It's like, it's something I've sort of evolved on. Like, I still take my career very seriously, but I think my relationships are more important. I don't know that I necessarily had that perspective at the time when Kiera and I started dating, but I think in hindsight, it's absolutely true. So, you know, if you think about like weighing risk versus reward, I think that the potential upside is like probably far bigger than I even knew at the time. And the risk is, you know, it's manageable.
Help Wanted is a production of Money News Network. Help Wanted is hosted by me, Jason Pfeiffer.
And me, Nicole Lappin. Our executive producer is Morgan Lavoy. If you want some help, email our helpline at helpwanted@moneynewsnetwork.com for the chance to have some of your questions answered on the show. And follow us on Instagram at Money News and TikTok at Money News Network for exclusive content and to see our beautiful faces. Maybe a little dance?
Oh, I didn't sign up for that.
All right, well, talk to you soon.
Thank you.